Hey.
Hi.
Yay, guys. Let's fucking go. We did it. We've been talking about doing this since the beginning, but there were some technical difficulties that we had to get through, but not get through, but
just a learning curve.
Yeah.
Of the workflow.
Yeah.
The workload.
Oh, man. Well, we are just getting back from our niece's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
My voice is kind of hoarse because we played some aggressive games of dodgeball, which you maybe saw on Instagram. I really need to post everything to save space. I posted my personal, but if you follow me on my personal, you probably saw some dodgeball.
I was litty like a titty.
She was, Carly and I, one of the rounds, it came down to her versus I. Her versus me?
Me, yeah.
Yeah, English. I'm not that good at that. I'm not that good at English. It's my only language and I kind of just know it a little bit.
Yes.
You know. But yeah, it came down to her and me and she took me out. She hit me in the foot.
Yeah, but you sabotaged yourself. It Why? Was a mindset thing because you were like, Carly always beats me at sports.
I know.
And you took yourself out before I even had the chance to.
It's true.
The mental game, babe.
Yeah, it's true. I did do that, but that's okay.
Which is not true. I don't always beat her at sports. She just psyched herself out.
I was pretty high.
You were kind of savage at dodgeball.
I don't know what I was doing, dude.
You throw fast as fuck.
You know. Okay. You heard it here first. Invite me to your fucking party.
To your dodgeball party.
To your dodgeball party. That would be so fun, though. Everyone gets drunk and plays dodgeball.
That was kind of me today.
Yeah. I was slightly buzzed, but it was a good time.
It was nice.
It was a good time.
My shoulder's going to be sore tomorrow.
Yeah, she was like, my rotator cuff. I'm like, honey.
That's a sign you're taking it way too seriously.
It's time for some eye cream. It's time for some eye cream. And like,
my dad was like, me too. I was like, oh, we are not on the same level.
Yeah, we are not the same. I am half your age, so don't say that. Surely.
Any
hoodles. Well, I think that the idea behind this episode was to talk about grief. It was just the fifth anniversary of our brother Ryan's passing on the 31st of March. And so obviously that comes with so much reflection. And we've all walked very hand in hand over these last 5 years navigating this together after a very unexpected passing. And we have really band together in our grief journey, I would say. And we all have very individual paths that we've been walking. But I'm fascinated by grief and I'm fascinated by the secrecy around it. And I'm fascinated by the semi-taboo.
The truth is that in the Western world, we don't have communal traditions around grief.
Yeah.
And so as communities, we don't share in the burden of grief with each other. The world keeps going at such a fast pace while one individual's or a family unit's world is completely shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And so the isolation of it and the existential experience of how is everybody else moving normally when my whole world just completely got destroyed, it's a very isolating experience in our society, in our culture, in the United States, I'm sure in other Western countries. But yeah, it's been really interesting to navigate. And I think our family is one of the lucky ones where stereotypically people say grief can tear you apart or it can bring you closer together. And we're really blessed to say that grief, I believe, has brought our family closer together.
Mm-hmm.
Any one of us would prefer to have our sibling or our child back over the experience we've had over the past couple of years. Like, I'd rather have my brother back than have anything that's happened in the past 5 years.
Yeah, same.
But it's...
Let the record reflect.
There is nothing that will ever replace the fact that we want our person back and that we grieve over the fact that we won't be able to involve him in the rest of our lives physically the way that we would have imagined. But we've made it a point to like remain close and to respect each other's grief journeys. And it has been healing in many ways, more ways than one, for us to let each other walk this walk and have respect for how each individual in the family needs to grieve. And I'm very grateful for that, for sure.
Me too. And I honestly think it's kind of fitting to be having this conversation. You know, I think most people hearing the intro that we just did of just like goofing around and talking about dodgeball would be like, whoa, that's kind of a stark difference of being like, we play dodgeball all day, whatever. And then we're like, we're going to talk about grief today. But I actually think it's really fitting because I'm just learning how to do this as I go. I'm learning how to be a human being as I go, period.
So is everyone.
So is everybody. Exactly. But the reality is that all of the stereotypes and the phrases that people say about losing someone, that's just real. And it just doesn't maybe hit or make any sense until you experience it yourself. And then
which stereotypes and which phrases? Life is short.
Yeah, exactly. Like love your people while they're here. Life is short. I don't know. Just some quotes that you see that they don't really hit, but then once they hit, they really do. And they make so much sense once you kind of traverse through your own journey. Well, I guess one example of a generalization or a phrase that a lot of people use, definitely a lot of people use, is time heals all. You know what I mean? Or in time. And I think, like, I'm curious to hear your opinion on that because I do have varied opinions on it. But for some people, time only makes the wound gush more. You know what I mean? And so
because
that's
it's
just
not time that's healing it.
Yeah.
It's your active participation in your healing and pulling on the threads of rawness within you and seeing what they pull out and like what it uncovers. You have to be able to confront that raw pain and emotion in order to become friendly with it and to be kind to it and for it to be kind to you in return. If you just let time pass and ignore everything, I think that the infection just continues to grow deeper.
100%.
And so time doesn't heal anything. It's effort. And I think effort and awareness and attention
over a prolonged period of time,
things come to the surface and they expel.
Yeah.
And you expel them and you clean that wound and it starts to heal. There will always be a scar and the pain is never going to fully go away, but I think that the anger can maybe lessen.
Yeah.
And the ability to relate to your loved one who has passed with love more often than with hurt and anger. Like the proportion of time spent thinking about your loved one through the lens of love versus pain or anger, I think it starts to.
Yeah.
The magnitude is with love, but that's with a lot of attention. And honestly, though, like that's way more straightforward than it really is. It's not like that. It's really like a crazy windy road with you'll think that you're weirdly have a handle on things and then out of nowhere you'll dip like crazy and you'll feel so hurt again, like as though it were happening now again. And I just don't think there's any avoiding that because we make deep connections with people and they play such integral roles in our lives and they shape us and they shape our perspectives on life. And they are such a huge part of us that the concept of never seeing someone again is, I think, heavier than we're really capable of holding all the time.
Yeah, I do too.
You have to compartmentalize that because it's too intense. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's also a big part of the time heals all. I think
time heals all. Listen up, people. What the fuck was that? What kind of New Jersey?
I was four steps ahead. My brain was ahead of my mouth.
She was firing off.
That's a huge part of the time heals all.
Say it. Come on. Say it normally. Time heals all. Just keep going. I'm sorry, I'll stop interrupting you.
No, time heals all. What am I saying? And heels start to walk in and they go with the clutch that you carry your lip gloss in.
Bodhi, shut up. I'm sorry. Bodhi. Does anyone want a dog? There's a dog for sale next door.
My neighbor's fence is really short. You could hop it easily.
You could easily steal this dog and take him off. I'm just kidding.
So before you rudely interrupted me with that weird,
I'm sorry,
that thing.
I'm so sorry. You're the one that did it.
I think that the compartmentalization of pain is the facade of time heals all. Because mm-hmm. you can't feel the rawness and the depth of the pain of grief at all times because you wouldn't be able to function.
No.
And move forward in your life. So I think we have biologically built into us the capacity to compartmentalize our pain so that we can stay alive and do what we need to do to stay alive.
Yeah. I have such a vivid memory. So Ryan died, obviously, I just said on March 31st, and I was at school. I had just gotten back. It was my senior year, my second semester of my senior year at college. I was in New York, and I had gotten back from spring break the week before, and so I had another 6 or 7 weeks left of school, and I worked full-time during college, and so I had 6 weeks straight that I was going to have to work or go to school, like straight through, and then I was would graduate. And he passed, and I ended up coming home for 3 weeks, and he was so excited for me to graduate, and I had worked so hard in college, and he was so proud of me, and so I was like, I got to go back, and I got to finish, you know, I obviously, I need to take finals, like I need to get this done, whatever. I swear there's a point in this story.
I'm sorry. I don't know why. It's not funny at all.
You're so insensitive. Cancel her. Somebody cancel her. She's insensitive.
I don't know.
It's fine. You can laugh. I've told you the story a million times.
I wasn't laughing. Something else was going on in my head that was so unrelated. Anyways, you had 6 straight weeks. I'm so sorry.
You were thinking about mom falling back. Anyways. The point of this story is that when I came back to school, I then had 3 weeks left. And so I worked and went to school 3 straight weeks, which was really intense, but it was honestly better than 6 weeks. But 3 weeks in the first month of your grief journey of no time off is really intense. And I really learned in that period of time how valuable I feel like compartmentalization in my life, in the context of how it's come up in conversation, has been always deemed as a very bad thing and as a way to escape your feelings and not face things that happened and face pain and things like that, you know, from childhood. And I really learned in that couple of weeks, I didn't cry one time except once in the middle of the night. It was like my body was so relaxed and I woke up in the middle of the night and it's like my guard wasn't up, you know?
Which is biologically
absolutely
how it would
happen. And no, that's exactly it. It felt like such a scientific thing going on in my body, you know? Like I had a mission to complete and I did not have the bandwidth to feel the intensity of the emotions that I was experiencing in my body and also do what I needed to do, you know? And I remember, you know, I graduated and it was such a proud moment for me. And I stayed in New York for a couple of days and then I came back. And the second I got in my mom's car at LAX, Adele was on the radio. Of course, I was so set up. Adele just knew. And I sat in my mom's car and she barely pulled away from the curb and I just hysterics. My body just completely released in that moment of like the mission was complete. I had done what I needed to do. I had put in the work and now I was onto this new chapter where I had to, not I had to, but I, whether I liked it or not, this was, these were the cards that we were all dealt and we were going to figure them out, you know? And so I just remember that very vivid moment of like a release and how biological it all was, you know, and how much our body protects us mm-hmm. in moving through life. And, you know, even at this point, I feel that all the time. And of course I can't be crying all the time, which I still do. I can't be, but I do. But
I cry so much.
I'm such a crier.
It's kind of alarming. I don't know. I cry a lot.
Me too.
For an array of emotions.
Me too. We can talk about that at a later date.
Okay.
But I'm amazed at our systems, honestly, and how much they are built to protect us. And on that same note, though they're built to protect us, you got to fight to break down those walls to feel. Because this is a very cheesy saying, but it's very real. And I thought of it one morning. I told Carly, the day that we went back to Lancaster, which was the prison that he died at for the first time, we were sitting, it was probably 6:30 in the morning. We were washing our faces, doing our makeup, I don't know, doing something. And I was like, we're about to go on a swim in our grief, is what I said to you. And I kind of sat there and thought about it, and I was like, I'm about to go and could just kind of dive into my grief, you know, and I hadn't been back there since. And then when we were driving up, it kind of clicked in my mind of like, if you don't swim in your grief, you'll drown in your grief. And if you don't learn how to swim in it on a pretty regular basis, in my opinion, you will not know how to swim and you will drown. And yeah, so I don't know. That's been something that I try to kind of almost dedicate time sometimes to thinking and feeling and connecting as much as I can. That's been helpful for me for sure.
Compartmentalization is crazy because I went back to work 1 week after he passed away.
That's fucked up.
I got a text from my boss 2 days after he passed away asking me when I was coming back.
Early.
I remember going into my office and everyone seemed to know.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these huge beanbag chairs in this room in my office. And I just needed to sink into the beanbag chair and I would have to leave. I wasn't really able to compartmentalize. I mean, I definitely was, or I never would have been able to get through those days, but I would have to leave work multiple times a day to sit in my car and deep breathe because my anxiety was so intense that I could not control it. And I was running into panic attacks left and right. And I would have to go sit in my car and deep breathe and just get myself to a place of calm enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be able to go back into that room. But it's absolutely fucking crazy what our society expects of us.
Yeah.
Your life is fucking shattered. And it's like, oh, come read these emails. It's psychotic.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, what the fuck is an email when my brother is not on the planet anymore? It's absolutely ass backwards in terms of priorities of how we treat humans, but everything about our country in our society is ass backwards about how we should treat humans. So I guess I'm not surprised, but it was an absolutely depressing, hurtful experience that just, it made me feel so bad for anybody I had ever met before who had told me that they had lost somebody. And now I know a fraction of what they had to go through in the aftermath of that event
mm-hmm.
to get through it in the society that we live in. It's dark.
Yeah.
There is no support. There is no support. Unless you seek it out, there is no support.
But that's an interesting part of Ryan's passing. And I think that this can be the case across the board for so many people in unexpected death is, well, his specific situation, there was so much secrecy around where he was. And it mm-hmm. wasn't, none of us, I mean, our community knew and stuff like that, but there's so much judgment towards prison. And there was also, Ryan was in prison for something he didn't do, but it's really hard to explain that to everybody, you mm-hmm. know? So you end up just kind of bowing out. There's also a culture that if you have ever spent time in prison, that you start to understand where everyone claims innocence. Mm-hmm. So then you start to feel like, well, I'm just going to have to prove myself. I'm going to have to prove him. I'm going to have to prove his innocence. I'm going to have to prove his goodness. I don't want to fucking prove any of this. So you're just not going to find out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there was such a palpable moment between my sisters the days after he passed where he had been so hidden from the world and so separated against his will. And it was so painful for him that it was just so necessary for people to understand in his community that loved him and that knew him from before all this shit, you know, that he had crossed over and that it mattered and he mattered, you know, mm-hmm. he mattered so much. And I mean, it was so amazing to like experience the outpour and stuff like that from people that.
Well, you think that you're going through the most tragic thing that could possibly happen. Various circumstances in life are unbelievably tragic. And when you're in a tragic circumstance, it feels like the most tragic it can get. And I did not take seriously that there was an option that my brother could lose his life. To me, the most tragic that this situation could get was that my brother was incarcerated.
Yeah.
And we did not get to have him in our lives in the way that we wanted to. And he was losing his life to trauma, serious trauma. And It was years of trying to uplift a human being and be a sounding board for someone who, honestly, we could not. The reality is there's an extent to which we would not have been able to understand the depth of pain that he was in and what he was really going through.
Yeah.
And so to me, the most tragic thing was happening, that he was incarcerated and we were all going through this and we were struggling and we were hurting and we were missing each other and we were terrified all the time. And he was incarcerated and he was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
But then really, he passes away and you're like, oh no, this is the most tragic thing that could possibly happen.
That shit was so big league.
And so it just dissolved all of the shame that had existed and all of the fear that had existed and all of the hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And priorities became very clear.
Yeah.
Like what's important in life became very clear and everything else completely dissolved. Like what mattered was the fact that we had our brother. And that relationship and the learning and the depth and the connection and the beauty and the love, that was what mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the judgment that we were anticipating throughout the entire experience, or that we received, because we did receive judgment.
For sure.
And our fears of all of that, none of that shit mattered at all. Who the fuck cares? We had our sibling and we wanted to see him through what he was going through. And we didn't get to. And that is the hurt. Like, everything was hurtful.
There's nothing that you could think or say that would hurt more than that. So just save your breath.
There's nothing that could happen that would hurt more than the fact that we don't have our sibling anymore. And that is, I think, what built the courage then to share. Because mm-hmm. none of the other shit mattered anymore. It was like the worst thing that could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we really have nothing else to lose. And our sibling's life was powerful and he was powerful. He had the most moving spirit and just, he was massive. He was just massive. His energy was overwhelmingly powerful and his brain, his intellect and his ability to understand from so many different perspectives, life. And to empathize with so many different people, and for his ability to parse out what matters in life was mm-hmm. so powerful. Like he always had his thumb on the pulse of what mattered in every situation, in politics, in music, in everything. It was like he could just get to the heart of everything without even trying and express it so clearly and beautifully. And it was a superpower. Like he had superpowers in that way.
That's genuinely one of the things that I miss about him the most is I miss asking him his opinions on things.
Me too. I miss learning from him.
Yeah, he had such rich opinions and viewpoints and they were always well-educated and fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so I trusted where he was coming from because I knew that he was looking at it in a holistic way.
Yeah.
He wasn't looking for anything to confirm what he believed. He was such a seeker of knowledge and mm-hmm. so bright, you know? And so I miss that so much. I miss everything, but, but yeah, I think that secrecy in his life was so painful, but I think that it catapulted all of us, honestly, into an aftermath that was focused on honesty mm-hmm. and truth and openness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned was just the general discomfort around death in general that I didn't have my finger on the pulse of because I had lost my grandma a couple years before, but she lived such a beautiful, long, you know, 100-year life and had done everything that she could do on this earth. And it's just it's a totally different dynamic and a feeling, though devastating and hard and, you know, comes with its own set of challenges. But yeah, I learned quick how not only I had experienced people not knowing how to go about the conversation of prison throughout my life, but the death layer added a whole new like trepidation from people.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood that to be not just for Ryan, but mm-hmm. just generally, people do not know how to approach the conversation.
And it's so not their fault.
No, it's not at all.
We're so not taught.
But it's so silly because it's the most guaranteed thing that we'll all experience. So
I think it's just so scary for people.
Yeah.
I think avoiding that reality is easier than living with that reality for a lot of people, especially when, again, we don't have traditions that are beautiful around death and grief.
Yeah.
And moving forward. And so we associate death with nothingness. Like you just cease to exist. And I think that tradition does soften that blow because one, it provides you with built-in support from your community, which is so helpful and special. And it also familiarizes people with closeness to passing on from this life, from this version of life. Yeah. And I think it does stamp out some of the fear and invites conversation that's very necessary.
Yeah.
Otherwise, conversation is just completely muted and there's no in for people to be able to connect with you. Like it isn't familiar. It isn't a familiar subject for people to communicate with. There aren't like phrases that are kind and loving that are just understood, you know, and shared between people. It's like people genuinely have no fucking clue what to say.
Yeah, they don't.
At all.
What's crazy?
I still don't know what to say to people, bro.
Jinx, you owe me a soda.
I still don't know what to say to people
when
I find out that their loved ones have passed away because everyone's grief is genuinely different. There are similar threads through all of it. Of course, the emotions, the depth of the grieving, the anger, the hurt, the denial, all of those things you can relate about. But the relationship that you had with your loved one is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you miss about that person is yours to miss. And what they contributed to your life is unique to them. And the lessons that you're learning with them and from them are unique. And so I think the challenge is sitting with the fact that you're not going to be able to comfort somebody through this experience. You're not going to be able to make it better for them. There's nothing you can say that's going to be able to make this better or lessen it. And if you try to lessen it and you try to minimize it and you try to make it better, it comes off as insensitive and ignorant. Mm. And so really, I think the best thing that you can do is just consistently show up lovingly. It's not about like asking, what can I do? It's just about being like, hey, I'm here. I'm always here. I'm here every single day.
Yeah.
Every week, every month. I'm not going to forget about this in a month, 2 months, 3 months. I'm still going to be here if you want to talk about it in 6 months, in a year, in 2 years. Like, you never have to feel ashamed to bring this up. We can always talk about it. I think that is powerful because it takes bravery. It really does to show up to those conversations and see your friends or your family grieving and knowing there's nothing you can do to make it better and not bowing out of that situation. That's really brave.
I think that speaks to every aspect of our culture, though, is not wanting to sit with discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about how we live life is to pacify through not feeling. The drug epidemic, like everything, you know what I mean? Social media,
even just
phones,
convenience culture,
100%
ordering everything to your door,
100% that we totally love.
And I'm in debt because of, 100%. I'm not going to say the company's name, but everybody knows I'd be ordering all my food.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But yeah, it's
also so interesting with Ryan in particular, because his life experience was very unique and we don't have the ability to look back on a bunch of videos of him and a bunch of photos of him. And I have one audio recording of his voice that I can listen to hear it. But we do have hundreds of letters in his handwriting and depth of thought and reflection on life. And so it's this crazy trade-off of not being able to see his everyday movements and inflections and laugh and smile and the light in his eyes and stuff. But we have this rich thought on life and the preservation of certain conversations through a letter that almost no one has.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm angry at the lack of memories, but a lot of times I realize the challenge of his circumstances allowed our relationships to get so much deeper than they would have needed to get if we were all just coasting
in life. Yeah, that's so true.
And we got to know him in a way that I don't get to know that many people.
Yeah.
Because he needed us to get through his days and we needed him just as much. And we learned the extent to which we needed him. I think when he passed away, we were able to understand the depth of how much we needed him in our family dynamic and what he contributed. It's not that we didn't understand that when he was alive, but when you lose someone and the hole is there and you realize how deep it is and how nobody else will ever fill the role that this person played in the larger family dynamic, let alone your own personal life.
Yeah. You know what's really trippy about the circumstance is for such a large portion of both of our lives, he was alive, but not in our day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
But our family really revolved around, not revolved, that's the wrong word. Ryan was very much so like a centerpiece of our family,
mm-hmm.
huge centerpiece of our family. And one of the trippier parts of him passing has been the mind fuck that is knowing that he's gone, but it almost feeling the same in certain ways because he wasn't, you know, at...
Does it feel the same to you? Because it doesn't feel even 1% the same to me.
It's not the same. It's just having to constantly remind myself like, oh, he's not away right now. Like, and not constantly remind myself. This was a little bit more in the beginning too. It's been 5 years. Some of the shock value has worn off for me and I've come to terms with the reality. But I felt like in the beginning particularly, it was, I had to continue to remind myself that this wasn't that he just wasn't calling us or something like that, you know, that this was perma. And now I feel like our family in a very similar way, but I guess different, still kind of, he's a centerpiece. He's such a loving centerpiece and something that someone that we are constantly talking about and bringing into our present and, you know, of course, telling the kids about and stuff like that. But it's just, I mean, it's definitely morphed and changed, but some of the overarching kind of like feeling is similar to when he was away versus when he's passed. And like I said, this was a little bit more at the beginning, but it's just interesting.
What's crazy to me is I genuinely have no clue who I would be without him.
Yeah.
The heart and soul of what feels like my purpose in life right now is a result of my experience with him.
Yeah.
Like I would not be doing what I'm doing if not for what he went through. And it's so crazy to think that because one person can shape the entirety of your existence.
I mean, Ryan.
And give you your whole purpose.
Yeah. Ryan's ripple effect is wild right now, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like through our advocacy work and some of the things that we're doing just in our private lives and things like that, his ripple effect of just existing and us loving him and existing with him is so powerful to watch. And that's a huge thing, too. Is, I mean, I've learned a lifetime's worth of lessons and wisdom, and I'm a silver lining of it is that I'm definitely a lot like closer to my heart through this experience, you know, and just truth. And 100% immediately certain shit falls off that's like, nope, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll never matter again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have the bandwidth for it to matter and it doesn't matter in the grand scheme. So bye. Like, I don't even have to think about it. This isn't something that I'm like, this doesn't matter. So I should drop it. But just the wild impact that all of us can have on people that are 3 and 4 times removed from you, you know, and like the legacy that you can leave on the world and thinking through when you're living your life, kind of what kind of mark you're leaving in your actions and your inactions, you know?
And I think part of the impact that he's making right now is a result of us being willing to share.
Yes.
And that's really like anything you've been through in life. We shame ourselves for the most random shit, just for going through human experiences. Like, there's absolutely nothing shameful about what we went through with our sibling. There's nothing shameful about it.
Yeah.
It's how we internalize the experience that feels hurtful and shameful, and also how society reflects on certain life circumstances, like even poverty. How the fuck is poverty shameful? How the fuck is it shameful to not have money? That's psychotic. It's not shameful. If you don't have money, do not be ashamed. Like, please, Lord. But we internalize that stuff and we compartmentalize and we find it hard to share or open ourselves up out of fear of rejection or judgment or whatever. And it's been such a healing and gorgeous experience for me to learn how to share.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been amazing the people that have come into my life as a result of me sharing and the impact that it's had. And I don't have to say much. Just opening myself up to other people and showing them that I've been through something. Everybody knows this. This isn't rocket science, but it really gives other people the space and the freedom to express themselves. And some people never express themselves. And if you give them that opportunity, it is so freeing for people and they feel so connected to you just for the fact that you made them feel safe enough to share. And when they maybe regularly don't feel safe enough or comfortable enough to share. And so I think everybody needs to take the time that they need to feel comfortable. And I respect that it's not always safe for people to share what's going on in their hearts and what's going on in their families. And we feel the need to protect ourselves. We feel the need to protect our loved ones. And that's so fair. And if you can find ways and spaces that feel safe enough to share, it frees you in a different way. And that's coming from somebody who I really spent the vast majority of my young life not sharing anything with anyone at all. I was a freaking vault and it didn't help. At all. It didn't help. And I still regret that in a lot of ways. I regret not lifting up my brother's story more than I did. And because you never know what can come of that. And the connections that we've made by sharing him in this phase of our lives, just amazing. Like, you never know where it's going to come from or when. And it's beautiful because it builds a compassionate community and an empathetic community. And a group of people that you know actually care about you and your journey, and they can relate to you in some way, shape, or form. And yeah, so share.
Yeah. One of the last things I'll say is someone a couple hours after he passed that I was talking to told me, and this is just a lovely way to think of it for me, that the hole in my heart would never shrink, but that if I grew my heart to be bigger, the hole would feel smaller. And Carly's probably heard me say this 427,000 times, but it's been very helpful for me along the years to open my heart through this experience and just in my life in general. And it's so true. The hole in my heart has definitely not shrunk at all, but I do feel like my heart has gotten bigger and my eyes are open more wide than they ever have been to humanity and suffering and death for sure. And it's definitely been the hardest thing ever, but it has come with many, many beautiful lessons and soul-building experiences, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I will say, I had this fear and anxiety about every day that would pass in the close aftermath after he moved on. And I kept thinking to myself, I don't want any more days to pass because I'm getting further and further away from when he was on this planet and from him. And someone told me, actually, every day that passes, you're getting closer to him because you're going to see him again. And that opened up the door for me to be able to move forward in life with less grief and less guilt and less fear.
Mm-hmm.
It freed me in a way. And if you've lost somebody, you're moving towards them, not away from them.
I love that thought so much. I remember when you told me that, I was like, damn, that hits.
Yeah.
That hit.
It really freed me because I really, every day I woke up, I was like, I'm another day further. He's been gone 32 days. He's been gone 55 days, whatever, 6 months. And that period of time almost made his life feel less legitimate and my grief less legitimate. But now I talk to him and I feel like every day I talk to him and I'm getting closer to him and nobody else has to believe this or agree with this or feel like this would be their truth if they're going through it or if they ever did go through it. But I feel that I have a really strong relationship with my sibling, and I feel that I communicate with him in a different way, and I keep my mind and my heart open to receiving anything that might come my direction that resonates with me as either him being present or some sort of connection to him or message from him. And that helps me move forward with love and joy, and it helps me heal. And so for me, it's necessary. Not everybody has to feel like they have a strong connection with their past loved one. You get to move through your grief the way that you do. But for me, remaining open to not judging what feels like connection to me has really helped me.
So yeah. Real.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. We connect all the time.
Yeah. We chat.
Me and my dog, every day.
We chit-chat.
We chit-chat every day. Having your older brother as your guardian angel. Pretty special.
It is.
Not my first choice.
No. I would so much prefer him here. Hanging out with me.
Not my first choice, but these are the cards we've been dealt. So we're going to do what we can with it.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I couldn't have done it without you.
No. My rock.
Let's fucking go.
I love you.
I love you more. Okay. Love you guys.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.